Mr. Drake, rail 19. Right, Mr. Drake, off the tape, I think you mentioned ENSA, the ENSA concerts.
Oh, yes. We used to, of course, provide as much entertainment as we could for the men. And about once a month we'd get an ENSA concert, and the Lady Joyce or Lady Armstrong, who were both vice president of the British Red Cross, they was always in touch with ENSA, and we got during, as I say, we'd put something on at least once a month, and if we'd no visiting people coming, then we'd put a dance on ourselves, you know. So, of course, we'd get the music in. We had the recorder, and we could put the records on our tapes, and so we used to get through a dance night probably once a fortnight, or depending how the patients requested it. If they were start clamouring, they want fancied a dance, then I'd soon arrange for a dance to be on, usually on a Friday night. Then there was once a week, nearly always on a Saturday, I used to arrange a coach to pick them up, whoever could walk. And there was free cinema down in Amick, so we could take them down to the cinema for them who were able to aboard the coach and go down. So they had a picture show once a week if there was plenty to go. So on the whole, we provided as much entertainment as we could so that they didn't get too bored with the hospital life. And there was a tennis court there and croquet green, so not all could play tennis, of course, but even if they was limping a bit, they could play croquet. So that was pretty popular.
What was the quality of the ENSA entertainment?
It varied. Quite good, you know, all round. Everybody seemed to enjoy it once one came down.
What kind of entertainment did they provide?
General entertainment, you know. Might be a comic among them. There's some good singers. I remember Ellen Cherry, she came down once over. She was, of course, a soloist. And it was always a good night. We used to provide a meal for them when they completed it. So we got a good talk with them all and thanked them for their efforts. And
did you ever have any that weren't very good?
No, they all went down very well because imagine you're out in the country and there's not a lot going on, so any form of entertainment was always appreciated, good or bad.
So the old joke that was, you know, every night something awful.
Pardon?
The old joke about ENSA that it would stood for every night something awful.
No, I found them very, very nice people. All those out of ENSA who came down, and they always enjoyed, they seemed to enjoy coming, and the patients always enjoyed it.
Now, this hospital, was it all other ranks, or did you have officers there as well?
Oh, we had anything up. We didn't have officers themselves in. NCOs, yes. Anything up to sergeant majors.
And what would happen if you got like a sergeant major as a patient? Would he still have to? You'd be still in charge of him?
Oh yes. He was under my command, as you might say.
He wouldn't be able to push you about.
Yeah, yes, and the he would keep to hospital regulations. And so they always did anyway. There was, I think they were all pleased to get the out of the main hospital and into an auxiliary hospital where it was a lot easier. And they had a bit more fluency, and if they could walk about, well, of course, they used to find out if there was any, like if they were walking patients, then they were always there assisting me if possible, you know, if they were a higher rank, and they always conform to everything, especially on a higher rank. They know the routine.
Now, you said you had the chance to play tennis at this.
Occasionally, if I got the opportunity, if there was anyone in who could play tennis, or any of the nurses who were off duty and fancied a game at tennis, and I could pinch an hour off, then I used to have a game at tennis. Of course, with indoor sports as well, like table tennis, chess and things like that, there was all in cards, and so there was always the indoors. I used to play quite a bit on the table tennis.
You never got a chance to play tennis with the DI?
No.
Was that not one of
I never saw anybody who played tennis in the DLI.
There was nobody else who was interested?
No.
And I think you mentioned, off the table again, chess.
That's right. Sometimes you get some good lads in. I had a lad who had been, university student. And he was interesting because he was a good player. And I'd done a fair amount, so I regard myself as a good player. And them days I used to think, well, I can beat anybody once I've played them. Once I knew how they played, then I could turn my game accordingly, so that once I've played them, if I lost the first game, I wouldn't lose another. So I was a pretty good chess player myself.
What about Bragg? Did you get?
Oh, we didn't get any kart schools in there. There was no money games played in hospital, no
now,
way.
Now, you're in charge of discipline in the hospital. How would you have responded? Did you ever have a case where the patients would have had a kart school going?
No, I never had a case where the cart, where the it was strictly out of bounds. Was.
If you had discovered it,
I would have probably given them a warning, don't let me catch you again, or else. I'd always give them a warning, this is not allowed in hospital. And
now, when you were with the 16th DLI,
yeah,
and you were involved in kart schools, was it illegal then, if it had been discovered by an officer, or was it tolerated?
I don't know. They seemed to know it was going on, sort of turned a blind eye, sort of thing, you know.
So nobody got into trouble.
Nobody got into trouble for playing cards when we was in the regiment.
So how long were you at this particular post?
Well, I was there roughly in at Ford at Castle 12 months, and then I moved over to. I exchanged positions with the corporal who was at Callaly Castle, which was just outside Alnwick, about 3 or 4 miles outside Alnwick, and that was right out in the country. And that belonged to an army man, actually, a Major Brown. So I never met him, but he'd done the same thing. He'd sort of dedicated the castle for the duration of the war. So it was the same thing on similar lines, but it was just for a change, you know, because the matron at Ford Castle, she was a really strict matron, really strict. She could have been in QAs in top rank, you know. And you always knew her mood when you saw her first thing in the morning. I could tell by her face what mood she was in. But she always used to calm down as the day went along.
What would she be?
Strict about anything, and she used to complain if the lad says such as, Oh, they don't muck in here. They're expecting all the nurses to muck in with them, as the army term, of course, mucking in. She said, what do they mean, Sergeant, by them mucking in? I says, they mean getting more associated with one another. She says, it's a terrible phrase, that. You know.
So she was standoffish?
Oh, yes, so she was. Her husband was the schoolmaster down at Berwick, and he'd been in the First World War. And he was just the opposite. He was just he was a gentleman. He used to come up sometimes when she was due for going off, and he'd come and have a chat with me, and he'd talk about old times and that. But he was a gentleman, he was. But he had a lame leg, I think he'd... I'm not sure whether it was a wooden leg or not, but he had, I think it was an artificial leg, and but he'd been in the First World War, so... But he was a very nice fellow, was her husband, but she was a stickler, she was.
What about the nurses? What was the policy on the nurses?
Well, the staff, the complement was, there was a nursing sister. She wore the dark blue and white. And then the nurses wore the sort of a pale grey and white, and they were all seemed to be interested in the job. They all seemed to do the job well, and then of course there was the kitchen staff and the cleaners, which were combined with the kitchen staff. You see, so
were there any rules on? Friendships between the nurses and the patients, or was that tolerated?
Well, not really. There weren't any strict rules. I mean, some patients would get a bit friendly with some of the nurses, but they were only there roughly about 3 weeks, so there was never any complaints from either side. I never had any complaints from the nurses, or if I did, it would be something minor, which I'd soon go round and correct, you see. So there was not a lot of animosity anywhere.
So it was the strictness of the matron that made you want to change?
Partly, yeah. And then a change of environment. You know, when he's stuck in one place for 12 months, it begins to get a bit boring. So, with permission of the major from Bishop Exham, with his permission, we changed over, and I took over at Callaly Castle, which was the same routine right the way through. The lads there used to go down every week to the cinema in Alnwick, whereas the other ones used to go to the cinema in Berwick. These used to go to the cinema in Alnwick. They used to arrange the coach, just say.
Were there any incidents that you can remember from this period that stand out?
No, the only thing, it was a different atmosphere in the one at Callaly Castle. The matron was a more jovial person, and she were more liberal, you know. You could get on with her, she used to come and chat to you, and same with the patients. She was different type of person altogether. She was a grand woman, and she'd do anything for anybody. And the old place was much more happier, if I can put it that way, than what it was at Ford Castle. But I didn't have any trouble with any patients there. Everybody seemed to get along a lot brighter, and they were a lot more friendly, was the attitude right away through.
Now, during this period, had you been following what was actually going on in the progress of the war?
Oh yes, we were always kept up to date. We were always listening to the news when the news came along, and we knew Of course, it was getting then, it was late 1945,
46,
coming up.
So you were at Killaly Castle as the war ended?
I was at Killaly Castle when the war ended. And then I got my instructions to, for, there was one thing we used to do, and that was the medical boards. I used to have to get all the papers ready when we were going to discharge a man out of the army, rather than send him back to a unit. If he's due for discharge, then we used to form a medical board consisting of a colonel who used to come down from Newcastle, and he'd probably come down once a month, and there'd be two or three patients going to be discharged. So I used to have to get all his medical records ready, and we used to have them all there, so was it. And then we used to fetch the patient in one at a time, of course, deal with one at once, and he'd recommend the amount of disability that he should get, that's for his pension, and give him his discharge papers. We didn't issue him with any demoed clothing. We sent him on to a depot where they collected it, and then he went from there. So, but that was the procedure, and the colonel who was to come down to do the sign all the discharge papers and everything, he was a very nice fellow. He said he always believed in giving him a good pension to start off with, he said, because after 6 months, he says, they'll get a review and they'll put it right, bring it down or whatever. But he says, and he always used to ask me what condition they was in, you see, because he hadn't a lot of time. Of course, he was just there to discharge them. But he was interested in every one of the patients who came in and to what sort of disability he was going to discharge them on. So that was another aspect of being at one of these auxiliary hospitals. That were towards the end of the war, you see, and there was they weren't needing them back. The war was more or less nearly over, and we could see it coming. And
do you
of
think
course,
the medical board was more relaxed? You said more relaxed about allowing people to leave than as when they realised.
Yes, yes. I think that's when they really were coming out to such hospitals as us to discharge them, because they must have been coping with doing the same thing at the general hospitals like Newcastle General and these sort of hospitals. They must have been discharging them from there the same, because they weren't necessarily needed so much back in the forces.
So earlier, when you were at Ford Castle, when you first got this job, there might have been a case of patients, they would be sent back to the units as fully fit.
Yes, oh yes, yes, yes. It was only at the later period that we got the discharging of patients.
So towards the end of the war, there would be more of a preference to actually discharge them.
Discharge them rather than return to the unit. So if they returned to unit, they had to be of a certain, as I say, most of them which were returned to unit were people with hernias and things like that, you see. The specialist at Newcastle, that Mr. Robotham, he used to do a lot of laminectomies, which is removing the a disc from the spine. We used to get quite a few of laminectomies in. He'd remove the disc from the spine, which was causing them terrible pain. A slipped disc, as you might say. Well, he used to remove it. And I think he was first man in the country to do that particular operation. But we used to get one or two of those in. But they never... we usually sent them back into an hospital again, but some of them come out all right and return to unit.
Now, so you were at Killarney Castle on VE Day?
Yeah, yeah.
What can you remember about VE Day?
Well, first of all, there was VJ Day, and that was the end of the Japanese War, and then... of course, we all were doing was we saw it on television. It was that's the only time I recollect anything about it, was watching it on television and round what was happening around the palace, and Princess Margaret mixing with the crowd, and that's the only thing I saw about it. We would just watch it.
Now, what were you actually doing yourself on VE Day?
Oh, just carrying on my normal duties in the hospital. I mean, everything had to go on just the same. And as I say, it was a very busy job. Sometimes you were working up to 10 o'clock at night and getting all the paperwork done.
So there's no special celebration?
No, there were no special celebrations. Everybody were so pleased, of course, and everybody were cheerful. And
had you managed to... keep in touch with anybody from your old battalion, from the old DLI battalion, over this period?
No. And there, I always thought I might see somebody who come in, might come in, but I never did. Nobody ever came from the DLI. But apparently, since discovered, George Forster was there at Ford Castle, but it was before I'd taken over. So I just missed George there.
And George was... George Foster was one of the C Company men in DLI.
Yeah.
Right, now, you were formally presented with your military medal.
That's right.
Buckingham Palace. Can you describe that?
The yeah, I was at Killarney Castle at the time, and the Major from Exham, when he came down, as I say, we used to see him once a week. Because he used to bring the pay to pay the men. And he must have applied, or somebody had, I don't know had, but I got papers to attend the investiture at Buckingham Palace. And so he arranged for me to have leave for that particular week and sent one person out to take over, and of course I went home and got ready to go to Buckingham Palace, which I duly did, and of course it was something different. I arrived at, I had an auntie who lived at Enfield, which is just on the outskirts of London. So we went down there on the one day, stayed there overnight so that we could get to the palace in good time and without any rushing. I had my two lads there, my two young lads and my wife, and we went in to Buckingham Palace. It was a big sort of room. The RAF band were playing light music. I was taken to the back and prepared to walk in front of the stage where the king was. And of course, when it came my turn, there was quite a lot going through. When it came my turn, I marched on. Did the usual court bow, and he just asked, had a few words with me, where was you at the time, and I just explained North Africa, because it weren't He wouldn't know just exactly where I was, so I just, North Athens Road, Your Majesty. So he pinned the medal on, and then I got the box as I walked off the stage on the other side, and then I rejoined my wife and two young lads. That was it. We had came out to the palace, and I was interviewed by a reporter from somewhere up north, Durham or Newcastle. And then spent a couple of days in London till I come home, and then back up to Kellerley Castle. So that was my investiture over. But it came as a surprise because I had no idea it was coming. But I don't know whether the Major had done it or whether it had been sent from War Office for me to attend. So that was very nice.
And did you get a chance to talk to any of the other people that were there to receive the...
Yeah, there's a chap who was getting them ready, and one or two, discussing where you were and things like that, you know, and what had happened. There were people you didn't know, so you hadn't a lot of intimate conversation with them, but it was just wild. It was your turn to go through, and you marched on, as I said. So I can't recall any interesting things what was said.
What do you feel about the award of the Military Medal, in terms of, did you feel that your actions were extra special at the time?
Yeah, funny.
Did you?
When it didn't announce the actual wording what was said, when it was announced that I'd received the military medal, and until I got in contact with you and you sent me the official citation, I always thought it was for the prior action which we took. That was when I stayed behind the machine gun and let the other fellas get out. I always thought it was for that, and I had a big surprise, because it was only until now, more or less, present day, that I find out what I really got it for. Which, it just shows, you don't know, you see, what does go on. But I naturally thought it was for that. I didn't think it was for the other action that we were in.
So the process of being recommended for the military medal.
Yeah.
You had really no contact with how that process
happened? No contact at all. It was just announced on parade that...
And you didn't know anything about it until that point?
No. And of course, I just assumed it was for that, you see. So it just shows you should never assume.
I think what we might do now, then, Mr. Drake, is possibly if we could look at the citation and possibly if you could read it out.
Yeah.
And I think that's what we'll do next.